Coming up, it's all politics from NPR News.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin. And Ron, welcome back.
Thank you, Ken. It's a pleasure to be back.
We had this rookie last week, Linda Wertheimer.
I think Linda's going to make it.
You think she has a career in this?
I see her going straight to the top.
Okay. Well, anyway, good week this week, an interesting week this week.
A big week, the week we've all been waiting for. General Petraeus, David Petraeus, commander in Iraq, and also his pewter-haired sidekick, Ryan Crocker.
Betty Crocker.
Yes,
I have
came in.
Coupons.
He is the ambassador to Iraq, biggest embassy we have anywhere in the world. He was a very important person, and nobody paid any attention to him because it was all David Petraeus all the time.
True, and it was whatever David Petraeus said on Monday, he said twice on Tuesday.
And then again later in the week when he talked to the press after he had had his 2 days of testimony on the Hill. And I think we're going to hear it all again as President Bush addresses the nation and endorses the idea of drawing down the surge just a little bit over the next year.
Ron, remember on your wedding night, you were anticipating it for the longest time, and when it happened, it really wasn't that big of a deal?
Of course it was.
Well, no, but the General Petraeus, for months we've been talking, once he speaks, once he gives his assessment of what's on the ground in Iraq, that'll change the whole dialogue.
I don't really remember Ryan Crocker having been there on my honeymoon, but you're right. Everyone thought this was going to be the great Rubicon. This was going to be the turning point. This was going to be the pivot. And as it turned out, it was a highly anticipated progress report that didn't really tell us anything new.
The headline is, 30,000 troops will be withdrawn by July of 2008.
Which is a whole year away.
Right, which also puts us back to where we were in February, the same 130,000 troops.
Well, we were basically, by next summer, we'll be where we were last summer.
Right.
And that's supposed to be good news. But was it really good news to the senators who were part of the, if you will, presidential contingent taking part in these hearings? In the House, just one, but five in the Senate. Let's listen to a little bit.
I don't see anything that leads to an early and honorable end to this war.
I don't seem to get an indication, don't get a feeling here that there's any real opportunity or optimism that this is going to get better.
There are no good options. There are bad options and worse options.
The reports that you provide to us really require the willing suspension of disbelief.
We finally have in place a strategy that can succeed.
Ultimately, what changed? I mean, Democrats, as expected, said this was not enough. This was, you know, there was no change. It was still status quo. It was just putting off a decision for six more months. But I think there was noticeable nervousness among Republicans as well. You heard it from some of the folks who were up for re-election, like Susan Collins and Norm Coleman, who were nervous. But, you know, John Warner, Dick Lugar, Chuck Hagel, of course.
The thing that I was struck by was the degree to which you had the same group of Republicans, maybe five, six of them, and that may indicate there are 10 or 12 in the whole Senate, who are willing really to do something, but they're not willing to defy the president and the president's commander, and therefore we're probably going to be stuck in the same political calculus we've been in for a couple of years now.
Although Harry Reid is talking about some kind of moderation of language, remove any kind of language for a definite timetable. By doing so, he hopes he'll get enough moderate Republicans nervous about 2008 who might come on aboard and may give them the 67 votes to
do what?
To overturn a veto, but it's still...
But they're not going to cut off the funding. They're not going to force a timetable on the president.
Right.
The policy is going to continue as it has been since the president announced the surge.
And the Democrats are getting more and more impatient and more insistent on what they want. Chris Dodd has said that he wants a cutoff of all funding by next spring. That's going to go absolutely nowhere, but I think that shows just part of the frustration on the Democratic side that what can we do about this? But I'll tell you what they can do about it. They can do nothing and wait for the 2008 elections. And
which might not be the worst strategy for the Democrats. Of course, they can't say that out loud. They can't say to the activist, the anti-war person, MoveOn.org, you know what, we want the war to go on for another year because we think it's going to kill Republicans in 2008. They can never say that, but on the other hand, there's some reality in that, and there would be a reverse reality if the Democrats did manage to seize control of the war policy right now, this fall, get enough Republicans to do it. If they did that, it would become their war and not George W. Bush's war for the next year before that election.
That's exactly right. I mean, I always think of how Richard Nixon, the Republicans, thought about sabotaging the Paris peace talks at the end of 68, because don't have a breakthrough right before the election. Just make it the Democrats' war, make it Lyndon Johnson's war. And one of the reasons Nixon won was because it was Lyndon Johnson's war.
So we have this extraordinary week in which we have the big moment on Iraq, which, as you suggested, turned out to be maybe a little bit of a predictive fizzle out. We had the sixth remembrance or anniversary of the 9/11 terror acts, which have so changed our history, which have so driven our politics for the last 6 years. If you step just slightly aside from that, though, there were a lot of other political developments this week, including a lot of candidacies up and down. And who's the candidate who you would say had the biggest up this week?
I would say Fred Thompson.
Because he got in the race finally officially, and because a new poll came out showing him pretty much the number two candidate, although maybe roughly tied with John McCain, who is, by the way, not disappearing.
He's not dead, exactly.
This Iraq stuff is helping him.
Well, I don't know if the Iraq stuff is. Certainly his performance in the New Hampshire debate was very good. You know, you saw Mike Huckabee, you saw Rudy Giuliani being extremely solicitous of...
Deferential.
Of
saluting
McCain,
John
perhaps
McCain.
Thinking he's no longer a threat. But you know something? He had a very good week. His numbers in the poll have increased. Nationally, Romney still hasn't gone anywhere, except he still leads in Iowa and New Hampshire. But the Fred Thompson thing is interesting because, as we've been saying from day one, his performance in Iowa and his performance in New Hampshire was extremely underwhelming. Again, generalities, again, you know, no specifics about issues, folksiness, and he shot up to the number two behind Giuliani in the national polls. I still say that this cannot last because I think this Thompsonism will wear thin. Now, he's doing well in South Carolina. The skepticism he got in Iowa and New Hampshire did not follow him to South Carolina.
But not yet, but what about if he tanks in the Iowa caucuses in reality in January or whatever month they hold them, and then he does not do well in New Hampshire as a result, finishes lower than third? Then I don't think he carries South Carolina either.
But I think that tanking is going to happen well before that, because I think ultimately he's going to I say this over and over again, he's going to have to say something. He has not said it yet. But having said that, he did have a good week. He's the latest Washington Post poll this week has him second to Giuliani, just, you know, basically tied with McCain. Giuliani was interesting, too, because this is probably the lowest he's been in the polls.
Well,
quite
he was
some
over
time.
40 at one time. Now he's under 30.
Right.
So he is the one candidate among all candidates other than John McCain who's had the most downward motion throughout the entire 2007.
I think we talked about this last week, but he did say something during the debate, the New Hampshire debate, which, again, it wasn't followed by a laugh track. But for him to say what he said about 9/11 is a bit curious.
The reality is that I'm not running on what I did on September 11. I'm running on the fact that I was mayor of the largest city in the country, the third largest government in the country. I was tested in that position with crisis almost every day.
Pretty remarkable statement. Given
yes, but the one day of when he was tested that everyone remembers is September 11th.
He is not the national front runner on the Republican side because he's pro-abortion rights, because he supports gun control, because he supports gay rights.
Although one can argue he isn't the number one candidate in spite of those things either. He's the number one candidate among Republicans because Republicans don't know about those positions. Every poll shows it.
And because national security and homeland security is paramount among voters in their minds.
He has the one sentence.
Right.
He has, at this point, all people know about the candidates basically is one sentence. And his one sentence is the best of any other Republicans. Some of the other political news includes a big one on the Democratic side. The biggest bummer so far in 2007 for Hillary Clinton, the clear front runner on the Democratic side. She took a huge hit.
Oh, excuse me.
She took a huge hit and had to return $850,000, far more than any other candidate has ever had to return because of an embarrassing contributor, or in this case, bundler, which of course is the guy who goes out and says, hey, I've already given the maximum, but I can find 250 people who can also give the maximum, and I'll bring those funds in all in a nice big bundle.
We're talking about Norman Hsu, is that correct?
HSU. I don't care where he went to school.
Exactly. But of course, he was caught matriculating in his room. But here's here's another thing. Okay, the other Irish guy. Barack Obama has made the case from the beginning that he is a candidate of the future. Hillary Clinton is a candidate of the past. When you think of campaign finance scandals, when you think of tainted money from Asian businessmen.
And I'm thinking about it.
As you should. You think of what happened to Bill Clinton in 96. Now, did it hurt him in 96? Bob Dole tried to make it an issue.
It did hurt him. It probably kept him under 50%. He probably did not get over 50% in the 96 election, in that three-way election with Dole and Perot, largely because of that particular scandal. And it also hurt him in 97 because it contributed hugely to the scandal atmosphere of his second term.
And it probably hurt Al Gore, too, you know, given the scandals about money. But again, it does not seem to have damaged Hillary Clinton in the national polls among Democrats when she faces, assuming she faces the Republicans, that will be a completely different story.
And speaking of completely different stories, let's talk a little bit about the Senate. Here, the news has been uniformly bad for just one party. Not only have they had the Larry Craig matter to deal with, which does not go away because Senator Craig has decided to stay and fight and try to get his guilty plea reversed in the state of Minnesota.
Which some people feel is potentially doable.
If you look at all the facts, you can certainly see a legal case to have been made, maybe not now, ex post facto, but could have been made in the moment if he had not chosen to plead guilty.
Of course, there's a difference between legality and politics, and there's a big difference there.
But I'm thinking about something else that happened this week that is also bad news for the Republicans.
Well, I could tell you two things.
Two things.
One happened in Nebraska.
Yes, deep in the heartland, Chuck Hagel decided not to run for re-election, which makes that seat pretty much a toss-up.
Absolutely. I mean, he won with 82% of the vote in 2002, the last time he ran. Now, there are some Republicans who hate his guts. They feel that he's a sellout on Iraq.
Well, he's been a huge opponent of the war in Iraq.
Right. He's probably the most caustic critic of President Bush on the war.
Although he pretty much votes with the president on every other issue.
That's correct. But again, the people see Iraq as being his calling card, and they don't like that calling card. But with Chuck Hagel gone, it perhaps brings Bob Kerry, the former governor, former senator, back into Nebraska. He's been the president of New School University at New York, and he could come back, give the Democrats certainly a shot at that.
Although he has been in New York City for quite a while and not really in Nebraska. And while he is a charismatic figure in a sense, he's also a somewhat divisive one. And there may be other people in Nebraska, which is a heavily Republican state. They could, for example, lure back the agriculture secretary, Mike Johanns,
right?
Who is a popular governor before he was in the cabinet.
But just for the record, Democrats have won 9 of their last 11 Senate races in Nebraska.
Which is astonishing considering that they've only won the presidential race in Nebraska once in the last 50 years, and that was
Lyndon
in 1964.
Right.
So this is not a state in which the Republicans want to be having to play tough defense, but with Chuck Hagel gone, they'll have to.
More bad news for the Republicans in the state of Virginia.
Oh, not too far away.
The Commonwealth.
Yes, two bad Warner stories. First, John Warner retires. Second, Mark Warner runs.
Right.
Mark Warner, the former governor, a Democrat, couldn't succeed himself because Virginia is the only state that has a one-term limit. And
he left the governorship extremely popular.
If he had been able to get another term, he surely would have won it.
Don't call me Shirley. So you have, had John Warner, who's 80 years old, had he run again for a sixth term, he would have won. Mark Warner would have stayed out.
I think so.
And now the Republicans have this big battle, an ideological battle.
That's right, because Tom Davis from Northern Virginia is a moderate to almost a liberal.
And Jim Gilmore was executed by a Utah firing squad in 1977.
Which was a huge, huge hobbling factor in terms of his presidential campaign earlier this year.
Speaking of presidential campaigns, I have a trivia question for you. I don't know if you know this. Joe Biden is the only sitting Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman in history to run for the presidential nomination. In the 20th century, three other former chairmen ran. Who were they?
Howard Baker?
No, never chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Never chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. He had been a majority leader, though.
That's correct.
Did Fulbright ever run?
No, they wanted him to run, but he did not run.
But he never actually did.
Richard Lugar.
Somewhat different. Oh, yes.
Richard
he ran Lugar. In 1996.
Right.
Had the enormous foresight to announce his candidacy on the day of the bombing in Oklahoma City. Not too much press attention for that event. But that's one.
Oh, yeah?
Just thinking back on some of the other Democrats who've had this
Democrat
job.
1976. Frank Church.
Frank Church. My God, that was a candidacy that many people have forgotten, including myself.
And
but you're absolutely right. He did.
And William Borah of Idaho.
Ah, yes. Two Idahoans. So we've spent quite a bit of time on Idahoans in this podcast. That, in fact, is the third Idahoan we've spoken of.
Right.
A new record for the podcast.
And Boise will be Boise.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elbin.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR, when I will actually know what the questions will be.
Don't you forget. First podcasting, and now mobile, too. You can hear NPR News headlines, today's most important stories, even the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me quiz on your phone. Find out more by clicking on mobile. That's halfway down the left side of the homepage at npr.org.